Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Well, hello, I'm Janet Moreno, the Executive Director of Priests for Life. Welcome to our program. Well, today is an exciting day because my guest today is someone who had a lot to do with the passage of that beautiful, beautiful heartbeat bill in Texas, something the whole pro-life movement, we are celebrating. Hallelujah. A bill was passed and a governor signed it into law. So we are just thrilled. Well, joining me today is John Sego, and he is the legislative director for Texas Right to Life. And there's a lot more to say about John, which I'm going to let him do personally. So John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, start by telling everybody your background, like what led you up to helping with this heartbeat bill? Let's go back. Where did you start out to get to that point?
Well, I've served as a legislative director for Texas Right to Life for over 11 years now and have worked with this organization as we have tried to find new ways to protect innocent human life. And Texas is a very pro-life state, but we are also a big state and we have very vocal opponents in the abortion industry, very vocal opponents in the Democratic Party. And so it is always a struggle to pass life-saving legislation in Texas, but I've had the privilege of working with Texas Right to Life for over a decade now, and we've had some great victories, but nothing tops what we were able to accomplish with our state senators and legislators this last year in 2021 with the Texas Heartbeat Act. That is really the kind of crown achievement of Texas Right to Life and the pro-life movement here in Texas.
Well, you also did have something to do with the dismemberment bill over there too, didn't you?
Yeah, so my organization is known for being bold. We sometimes get a reputation for being hard to get along with because we have very high standards of what legislation we want to work on. And our legislature here in Texas only meets every other year. And so we have a small 140-day window every other year to pass life-saving legislation. And so we get legislators all the time say, oh, I've got a great idea for a bill. And we unfortunately have to break the news to them, hey, that's a good idea, but it doesn't rise to the level of priority. It's not something that's going to save lives or shape the cultural conversation or help us overturn Roe. So it's a good idea, not the best idea. Whenever we do that, we always promote very bold legislation. And one of them was the dismemberment abortion ban that after years and years, 4 years of fighting in court, the Fifth Circuit finally said we could is constitutional and is upheld. Now, that was entirely lost in the headlines because it was during the Texas Heartbeat Act enactment. And so everybody's been paying attention to that. But Texas does have some great pro-life bills that we've been able to work on. We're just happy that all of our legislators are still being bold and still ready to fight for life.
Well, and you know, a lot of people realize that this whole heartbeat bill concept has been around for over a decade. In fact, a good friend of mine, Jenna Porter, up in Ohio, she was one of the people who originally came up with this whole idea of creating a bill that once you could detect the baby's heartbeat, you couldn't abort the child. And I know they've tried it in other states. In fact, it did pass in Ohio, but at the time they had a pro-abortion governor who would not sign it into law. And that's been the obstacle, I think, in some of these other states that the legislature passed a heartbeat bill, but they couldn't get it signed into law. So tell us what's different about Texas. We know your governor signed it into law, but I do believe your heartbeat bill was crafted specifically very different from some of these other bills. So tell us about, like, how did you get involved and who were the other players that helped craft this very unique heartbeat bill?
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right, is that there's nothing unique about recognizing the heartbeat as an important point in development for the child. As you mentioned, Janet Porter's led on that. Other organizations, we have friends in Ohio that were in on that movement. So that absolutely, whenever Texas kind of looked at what we were going to do to protect innocent human life in this last legislative session, a Heartbeat Act was out there. And we had a couple of legislators that were very passionate about, let's get a Heartbeat Act. And We had one kind of the biggest champion of it was Senator Brian Hughes from Tyler, Texas. And he was really the champion on this bill. And so he came to us and some other attorneys and a group of us that said, and he said, hey, we want to pass a heartbeat bill. That's what we're going to do. But, you know, how can we succeed where other states have failed? Other states have been stuck in court. They've had injunctions. They know no other state, even though 13 had passed a bill, no other state was able to enforce the bill. So how do we get around this? And that was kind of our marching orders from Senator Hughes, and is to figure out how can we succeed where other states. And so with a group of other attorneys and another group, we got together and started looking at what are ways that we can keep the abortion industry on their toes, keep them following this law and not get stuck in court. And so we came up with this very unique mechanism for enforcement. And that really was the key, is not necessarily what it prohibits. You know, our bill, just like the others, prohibits performing an abortion on a child who has a detectable heartbeat. The unique part was what we do if we think there's a violation. And that's really where Senator Hughes and us were able to kind of push forward this unique model that has been successful for since September 1st. And so we're talking about more than 10,000 lives. Our estimate is more than 10,000 lives have been saved so far in Texas from elective abortion because of this kind of unique model of Texas Heartbeat Act.
Okay, so take us to the timeline. When did Senator Hughes and you and the other gentlemen first get together to start this work? What year was that?
Yeah, so that was in 2020. We were preparing for our 2021 legislative session, and there had been legislators that were interested in Heartbeat Act back in 2019. A bill was introduced and was discussed. Didn't get a hearing, didn't get moving. And there were still concerns about how can we succeed where other states, you know, have run into the brick wall of the federal judiciary. And so Senator Hughes kind of took this to heart. And in the interim, during 2020, he was really kind of trying to figure out how do we do this. And then in November of 2020, Senator Hughes had an interim hearing. And an interim hearing, he's the chair of our state affairs committee. And he had this hearing. And the question was, what can we do to protect innocent human life? And he specifically asked in the hearing charge, bills like fetal heartbeat bills. And so we had a hearing, and this was 2020, November. So we were on Zoom. Unfortunately, we weren't in person in our great capital like we usually are. And we had a hearing, and he asked each individual, a couple of pro-life groups were there, some experts, medical experts were there. And he, you know, asked, what can we do? Would you support a Heartbeat Act? How can we succeed where these other states haven't? And so, you know, all the groups were very, you know, kind of realized he was serious about this. He really wanted to champion this issue. And so after that November hearing, we got kind of went back to our notes and went back to our drafts and kept working. And then January of 2021, we had our session began. And that's when Senator Hughes was able to file and roll out his bill that had kind of had this unique idea of the law is not going to be enforced by attorney general. It's not going to be enforced by district attorneys. It will be enforced by private causes of action. Individual pro-lifers could sue the abortion industry if they have evidence that the law has been broken. And that way, that the only time we get to talk about whether this law is constitutional or not will be in that context of an abortionist has violated the law and is sued. And now the abortionist gets to say, oh, this law violates Roe v. Wade in the first place. And it would be in a state court rather than a federal court. And we think that was a more proper venue because we have a long history in the last decade of passing bold pro-life laws and then them getting blocked by federal courts. And so this was Senator Hughes and a couple of others kind of unique effort to make sure that we have a bill that actually saves lives while, you know, highlighting the humanity of the child. They have a heartbeat.
Right. And so let's just delve into the enforcement a little bit more, because you know why? When you think about, because I still get this question to this day, you know, under President Bush, they passed that great Born Alive bill, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem with the Born Alive bill was there was no teeth to it, no enforcement, right? Yeah. And that's why now they're still struggling trying to pass another borderline bill. And as we know, Pelosi's got that all blocked and it's sitting on the shelf. And the average pro-lifer out there across the country, they scratch their head like, well, what happened? I thought we did that with Bush. What happened? Why is, and it is this enforcement piece that is so important. But just give us a few examples. Like, so for example, this law has been already in effect now for several months. Has any private citizen tried to prove that an abortion clinic didn't follow the law? Like, what's happening there on the ground, so to speak? You know?
Yeah. So this was, I mean, to be honest, this was a new approach. And so it was a trial run of sorts. And we weren't exactly sure, you know, how this was going to work. And we knew that all the tools were on the table, but we were willing to try it and to see how the abortion industry would react and then whether we could successfully bring lawsuits if they did violate the law. And so so what has happened is the law says, if you have evidence that anyone has broken this Heartbeat Act, they performed an abortion on a child who has a detectable heartbeat, or if someone has aided and abetted in an illegal abortion, in that case, they could be liable. They could be sued by an individual citizen. And that's not unique. We kind of use that in other public policy areas. Medicaid fraud, for example, if you go to your doctor's office or if you work for a doctor and you overhear some things or you see some evidence that he may be committing Medicaid fraud, you have a right to go to court and to sue that doctor. And you get money, a percentage of what is proven that he was smuggling tax funding or illegally being reimbursed for services. So this kind of idea of private causes of action is not really unique. It's just unique in this context of the abortion fight. And so we put that in the law, that regular citizens have this opportunity and this standing. And we really didn't know if we were going to be able, or if the abortion industry was going to comply. And so my group, Texas Right to Life, we created a whistleblower website because we didn't know where we were going to be. So I wanted to make sure the abortion industry knew we're watching very closely. We're going to see if you follow this law or not. So we created a website. We started promoting this idea after the bill passed. And the abortion industry actually responded by suing me personally and Texas Right to Life in 14 different lawsuits. We had 14 different lawsuits in state court saying that we were violating their constitutional rights to abortion by promoting Senate Bill 8, the Texas Heartbeat Act. And so what we saw was that was the industry's response. They actually said, we're forced to comply with the law, even though the attorney general's not knocking on our door, even though the medical board or our Health and Human Services Commission isn't, you know, sending us letters telling us to comply with the Heartbeat Act, we feel like we have to follow because we don't want to be sued. That's too much of a liability. It's too, you know, it's too risky for them to continue business as usual. And so the abortion industry voluntarily followed the law just because they didn't want to get sued. Because my group had made it very clear we were watching closely. And so that's been the situation since September 1st, is the abortion industry is not performing an abortion on children who have a detectable heartbeat, which is around after 6 weeks. And so that's what we've seen here in Texas every day. Now, there was one abortionist who wrote an op-ed saying, I broke the law. And he was very vague about it, but he said, I broke the law. And three individuals sued him. Those cases haven't gone anywhere. Two of the individuals that sued him were not pro-life. They were really just kind of taking the legal bait, so to speak. And in their filings, they said, we're pro-choice. We just want to get some lawsuits in kind of the system so we can go ahead and get the Texas Heartbeat Act declared unconstitutional. So it was kind of an inside job kind of thing. But so far, we only know of one pro-lifer, you know, truly pro-life activist in Texas who has tried to file a lawsuit against an abortionist. Mostly we don't see a lot of cases because the industry is complying. They're following the law and thousands of lives are being saved because of it. So that's the biggest thing that Texas Right to Life is celebrating.
That's right. So tell us, what's that watchdog, what's the webpage for that watchdog website?
Yeah, so we ended up taking it down. It was unnecessary. We got kicked off of our web server, GoDaddy canceled us because of our pro-life activism. A couple of other servers kicked us off. And so our, you know, bless our IT guys. They have been, they had quite a year last year. We had cyber attacks on that site, you know, 24/7, more than a million cyber attacks a day. And so our IT guys were working on that. Once we saw that they were complying with the law, we kind of switched to, okay, if you think, and we've told all of our partners this and our networks of sidewalk counselors and pregnancy centers, if you know of any violations or have reason to believe, just call us, because the website itself was becoming a distraction. So that website's not still up right now, but TexasRightToLife.com, our main site, is still up, and all the contact information there. And thankfully, the other side has not been able to shut that site down. But we decided to just focus on that one and not have the distraction of our whistleblower site for now.
Okay, so now let's just look at this whole thing for a minute, because at 6.5 weeks, we can detect that heartbeat, right? And, you know, most women, they're about 4 or 5 weeks pregnant when they're with that EP pregnancy stick and they know they're pregnant, right? So it's almost, we're almost hovering around the same time frame. But we also know what a lot of women are doing right now, and the abortion industry, they're giving the medical abortion, RU486. So how does this get enforced then when we're talking about there's not an abortionist, as we know? First of all, in order to dispense the pills, you don't even have to have a doctor anymore now that the Biden administration loosened the FDA rules on, you know, RU486. Right. It's ridiculous. So now basically the women of Texas can go into an abortion clinic, say they're going to get a test to see if they're pregnant or not. So who's monitoring if they're walking out with that little bag of RU486, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is the future. And for Texas Right to Life, you know, that is definitely going to be the future of the abortion fight. Even if Roe v. Wade is overturned, we have this issue of abortion-inducing drugs. And we have seen that the industry is evolving. You know, no longer are we going to have the days of Planned Parenthood on the corner, you know, with a brick and mortar presence. It's going to turn to apps, to websites. And we've already seen that, you know, and that's actually one good thing that has been, we've experienced in this last year, is we're kind of getting a glimpse of what a post Roe v. world is going to be like. We have had a preview here in Texas for the last 4 months, kind of a preview of an abortion-free state or an abortion provider-free state. And so now we're looking at, and we're looking at these new trends and how the abortion industry is evolving. And this is one way that they're doing it. They've created these apps, they've created these websites where they will mail abortion-inducing drugs directly to women. And as you mentioned, the FDA is just willingly enabling them to move to this type of model. We have doctors from other countries, doctors from other states, advertising their services that they will mail abortion-inducing drugs directly to women in Texas. And that is not just in violation of the Heartbeat Act. That's in violation of a lot of our other pro-life laws. But that's actually why we really think this private cause of action piece is important, is because even moving forward into the post-Roe world, we're going to need more legal tools on the table to hold these individuals accountable. These individuals who are promoting death, who are promoting a dangerous activity, and who ultimately make money off of taking the life of an innocent child. We need more legal tools on the table rather than just relying on our district attorneys, who, I live in Austin, Texas, so our district attorney is a Democrat, and they ran on a pro-abortion platform whenever they were asking to get elected. I know that's the case in many of these cities where there's abortion providers. And so we need this private cause of action, so a group like mine, or, you know, some of your audience who are pro-life activists, they have the tools that if they have evidence of the abortion industry breaking the law, they can themselves be involved in the solution to hold them accountable. And so that's why that's really important. And we'll be promoting that. Texas Right to Life has been promoting that. Yes, Dobbs is very promising. We're very excited to see what happens in the Dobbs versus Jackson case. But overall, the pro-life movement needs to think strategically of how are we going to continue to save lives, continue to fight the abortion industry in this kind of new kind of front of the battle, which is, as you mentioned, abortion-inducing drugs. And so that's going to take some innovation. That's going to take some kind of maybe stretching with what we're comfortable with. A lot, you know, even some pro-lifers don't like this idea of private citizens suing individuals to hold them accountable to our pro-life laws. But these are the types of innovations, the types of questions that the movement's going to have to face, even if Roe v. Wade is overturned.
Well, you know what, John, I really think, too, this is going to have to change the strategy of the activists who are sidewalk counselors in Texas and those praying outside the abortion clinics in Texas. Because, again, maybe we need to have signs that say, if you've just received chemical inducing, you know, abortion drugs, we can sue you for taking them. Beware. Not because right. When you think about it, if you see the woman coming out with that little brown bag, you know what she's got. She's got RU46 in there. She's already taken pill one. And maybe we need to have signs about abortion pill reversal. You could, if you change your mind, we can help you and you won't get sued now. Yeah. For destroying the life of that baby. So when you say strategies, I think these are the conversations that have to be held now. Mm-hmm. Because to me, the whole chemical abortion thing is where they're going to go. That's they're going to be their go-to place, especially now that they know they have a very friendly FDA and Biden administration who's just opened up the floodgates for them and say, oh, you just send it in the mail. No big deal. You don't even need to have a telemed appointment. No, just mail it to them. No big deal. No big deal. You know, right. I mean, for goodness sakes, I can't even get a prescription of antibiotics without going to see a doctor. But now they can get the abortion inducing drugs like 1, 2, 3, snap your fingers. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think there's got to be discussions in the pro-life movement that this is where they're going to go. And we've got to have our messaging for outside these abortion clinics, and especially there in Texas, where they can, you know, scare some of these people into, you better not go in there and get a chemical abortion pill because we could sue you. You know, scare them that you don't want to do that. We'll come to us. We'll help you. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really kind of why we've been so thankful for this last 4 months of experience, is because at Texas Right to Life, we've been asking, how do we create a kind of a pro-life state, even if our state is abortion free? How do we create a system like you're saying, where women know their options, they know that they have better, better places to go, better services to receive. So we've been building that for the last, since 2003, we've been building that network of social services like pregnancy centers and adoption agencies. But if, you know, Roe is overturned, they're still going to have this issue of chemical abortions, and whether they're on the black market or whether, they're being mailed directly to women, we still have to be there. And so you're right. Those sidewalk counselors turn into, being associated maybe with pregnancy centers that advertise more bluntly about chemical abortions, about the outcomes, and about how they can help you, even if that's the path that you've thought you needed to take by ordering these drugs. But you're absolutely right. That is going to be it. And I think that's one thing we're concerned about for the pro-life movement, is that if Roe v. Wade is overturned or folded back significantly by the court, a lot of pro-lifers will think that the battle is over, that the war is over, rather. And unfortunately, we're trying to communicate the battle is just shifting. You know, we're here in Texas. We're right on the border of Mexico. And we've already had Mexican activists, pro-abortion activists in Mexico saying, you know, we will send these drugs to you directly over the border, or bring them to you over the border. And so the pro-life movement is going to have to look at some public policy solutions that, you know, we typically don't turn to to stop these illegal activities that, you know, yes, it's breaking the law, but more importantly, at the end of the day, there's a life in question. There's a life at stake, a preborn life, and there's a woman whose health is being jeopardized by this really dangerous behavior. And unfortunately, the FDA is putting their stamp of approval on this. But you're right. Pro-life movement has a lot to work on supporting women and dealing with these new threats of chemical abortions.
Yeah, and what we know from Rachel's Vineyard and Silent No More is that the women who do have the chemical abortion, they're coming to healing quicker because they're more traumatized, because they become the abortionist by directly taking the pill. And then their bathroom and bedroom become the abortion clinic. There's no blame game. They can't blame the abortionist. They can't, every time they drive by that clinic, get that uneasy feeling, oh, I can't go down that street. That's where I killed my baby. No, it's being done in their home. And so, and they're seeing the remains of the child, and they're panicking. They don't know what to do. So the trauma is greater and deeper to these women. And so you're right. We have a lot of work to do, but here's a little fact I'd like to tell you. While you guys were passing the heartbeat bill here at Priest for Life, we started a campaign last spring called My Heart Beats Just Like Yours. Okay. And it's showing the unborn child in the 7, 8, 9, and 10 week development. Beautiful pictures, lots of facts. Matter of fact, you can go to the website, anyone who's interested, myheartbeatsjustlikeyours.com. We have t-shirts, water bottles, bumper stickers, like the whole gamut. Because I've had this gut feeling for a while now that we've got to shift gears onto this medical abortion, because that's where they're going to go. Because they can't find, first of all, they're finding few and few doctors willing to do surgical abortion. That's point one. And the chemical abortion, it's makes it cheap and easy. Planned Parenthood doesn't have to build these big mega brick and mortar buildings with chemical pills. It's easy peasy for them. So you know that's their go-to thing. But there's one more question before we're out of time I want to ask you. I've seen the abortion industry advertise and fundraise that they have to have mobile abortion vehicles on the border of Texas to help the poor women of Texas. Have you seen that whole campaign?
Yes, unfortunately, we've been tracking how the abortion industry is adapting to the Texas Heartbeat Act. And just as I said, we have to innovate to save lives. You know that the forces on the other side are innovating to take lives. And so unfortunately, there's been a lot of these types of innovative approaches to taking life.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, John, I have to applaud you and your team in Texas. It's bravo. Job well done.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you. And I'll see you in Washington next week, okay?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Okay. God bless. Well, brothers and sisters, speaking of seeing you in Washington next week, John and a whole team of folks, including even Senator Brian Hughes, are going to be at the DAR Constitution Hall the day of the March for Life that morning at 8:30 a.m. We will have an interdenominational prayer service where we're going to give awards to the people of Texas. And to these gentlemen, they're going to all be there, including Janet Porter. And we're honoring them and praising them and giving them a beautiful award. We're going to be praising and worshiping. So I'd love to see more people pour into Constitution Hall on Friday, January 21st. For the Catholics, there'll be a mass starting at 7:30 a.m. with Bishop Coffey, the main celebrant. And then the prayer service kicks off at 8:30 with a beautiful Christian singer. And you can go to priestforlife.org/March for Life for all our activities. But I want you to be there and praise with us this great step forward for the pro-life movement with this heartbeat bill in Texas. Join us there to congratulate Texas and these people who work so hard to make this become a reality. So hope to see you there. I'll be there. And I can't wait all to join us. And of course, finally, just go to myheartbeatsjustlikeyours.com where you can order t-shirts and water bottles and all sorts of great stuff to continue educating everybody, no matter what state you're in, about that baby's heart beats. At 6.5 weeks, we can detect it. But just so you know, it starts beating at 3 weeks. So by the time we get to 6.5 weeks, that little heart's been beating millions of times. Let's save these babies. And remember, brothers and sisters, there are some abortions only you can stop, and some lives you will only be able to save. Join me again next time. Thank you, and God bless.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.